So let's look at these five steps, and then we'll pick apart the part of the narrative that we read today. I want to look at just this in some detail. I left space in your little outline that you could write notes if you care to. Peter didn't think he was weak. Isn't it interesting? Who was the one that told him he was weak? Was it the other guys? It was Jesus. Wouldn't you think he'd listen? I mean, I could understand if the other guys say, Peter, you're a loser. I mean, any guy who's got a card-carrying guy, you know, who's a member of the guyhood, is gonna recoil and react when somebody else tells him he's a weakling. Never ask a guy to help you lift something and say, is this too heavy for you? Because they'll lie. They will not admit it. They'd rather break their back than admit that, yes, this is too heavy for me. I'm so sorry, this is too heavy for me. That's the way it comes out of a guy's mouth to his own ears. I was going to ask for a show of hands. How many guys have hurt their back over that very same thing? But I don't want to embarrass you. But I would raise my hand because I did it a couple of weeks ago. We had two 20-year-old guys on our antique hunt who offered to help me with my massive house jack that I bought. Heck no. I don't need no stinking help from no stinking 20-year-old punks. I didn't say it that way. I just sucked it up and lifted my house jack and carried it out to my car and felt the pain for the next 2 weeks. I think if you look at this whole deal, and I think it's worth analyzing, I sure have in my life, because as I've replayed the sad details of my own failures since I've been a believer, I've traced it back to these exact same steps. Why didn't Peter think he was weak even when Jesus said he was? And you find it in the text we looked at last week. It's because he compared himself to other people. It's really easy to find people that are weaker than you on certain subjects. I love what Abraham Lincoln said. He said, we are all ignorant just on different subjects. We're all weak. But sometimes it's on different subjects, and it's really easy to find somebody who we're better at something than they are, and we look at them and say, yeah, well, there's the weakling. But in our minds, we aren't looking at our own weaknesses. And Peter was comparing himself to other people, but see, the problem was he was way overestimating his own devotion. I believe he meant it when he said, Lord, everybody else would deny you, but not me. Have you ever seen somebody make a horrible mistake in an area where you felt fairly confident and you looked at them and you said, I would never do that. I'd never make that mistake. Do you know the heavenly angels were dialing 911 when those words came out of your mouth? Satan was looking up your file, pulling out all the details, and plotting his strategy of how he was going to call you on that. It's folly. I mean, you may be better at some things than people. Every time I hear a person say, well, I'm not like other people, I just cringe. Because I've said that. And I live to regret it. Why? Well, it kind of leads us to step two. When Peter was snoozing after the warning, instead of praying, and Jesus came and said, Peter, you need to be praying. You need to be alert, paying attention. You need to be connected to your power source. Why didn't he do that? Well, yeah, but the reason that he didn't do it is because he didn't think he needed to. You don't guard where you think you're strong. Can I just pass this on to you, something I've learned through sad experience? We guard ourselves where we know we're weak. We don't guard ourselves where we think we're strong. Guess where the enemy is going to attack? In that area where we think we're strong, because we're not guarding it. I saw a National Geographic special one time on the Great Wall of China. What an amazing feat. I mean, today with construction stuff that we have, it would be an amazing feat. The terrain was unbelievable. And one of the dynasties built this wall. It took a long time. I should have done my research and told you how long, but you can look it up. Google it. But you know how the kingdom fell? Nobody breached the wall. The wall was fully in place. All the gates were in place. It was guarded. You know how the kingdom fell despite that wall? The enemy bribed the guards. Everything depended on the guards. So they got their wall in place and said, now we're safe. But they just hadn't counted on. Nobody was checking on the guards. There weren't any backup guards. The reason that Peter didn't follow Jesus' advice to guard himself was he didn't think he needed to. This, I think, by the way, folks, just to add a little point in here, this is one of the reasons why Peter needed to fail. He needed to know what he was capable of because he didn't have an accurate appraisal of his strength or his weakness. He just didn't know. He needed to know. He never made this mistake again. I told you the story last week of a Fortune 500 CEO who, when he had top positions to fill in his organization, he only hired people who had failed at that job before. Because I read this in Forbes magazine. He did his research and he found out that 92% of the executives who failed once didn't fail at that job the second time. So it was purely logical. He said, I've got a better chance with the guys that have failed than I have the guys who haven't been tested yet and fallen. And we talked about that last week as well. So he didn't follow Jesus' advice to stay alert. I'll pass this on to you, whoever you are listening to these words, if you're here or listening online or some other point in time. If you feel at all the tugging of the Lord to draw close, don't resist. Because he may know something that you don't know. He may know pressure that's coming around the corner that you're going to need that strength. That's why before every service we pray downstairs, a bunch of us pray that those people who are sitting at home trying to decide whether to come or not, we pray that Jesus will tug at your hearts. And that you'll give in to him. We talked last week about that scripture that says God won't allow us to be tested beyond what we're able to bear. But along with that testing, that temptation, he'll provide a way of escape. And the problem isn't that we don't have a way of escape. The problem is we don't take it. This is Peter's way of escape. When he's praying and Jesus says, Peter, you need, when he's sleeping and Jesus comes and says, Peter, you need to be praying. You need to be drawing close to your Father like I'm doing. I know I can't make it through this test without my Father's strength. Peter, you need to be praying. Boy, listen to those tuggings. Step number three, when the pressure really was on at the moment of truth and in the clutch, Peter simply reacted in the flesh. Duh! Why did he react in the flesh? He hadn't been plugging into the Spirit at all. And of course, our enemy knows that, doesn't he? So Peter's got the wrong response at the wrong time, lashing out at the wrong enemy. And I've done this, And I've watched people do it. They fight against their husband, they fight against their wife, they fight against their kids, they fight against people in the church, they fight against their neighbors. It's pure flesh. When the pressure is on, rather than drawing close to Jesus, they haven't been doing that. They haven't been feeding their spirit. You know what it is? We've got a bunch of doctors and nurses and medical people in here. You know this. When you're not eating right and you're not sleeping right, your body can't fight off disease. You're vulnerable. That's what breaks my heart when I see people who are, they're not feeding themselves. And it's a lot of times, you know what it is? It doesn't look unspiritual. It's just life. Better things to do. You don't have time. We talked about this last week as well, how the minute you sit down and you say, I'm going to take X number of hours or minutes or whatever I've got, and I'm going to feed myself spiritually, that the distractions flow like wine. I've got 5 magazine subscriptions that I can sit and read for hours without distraction. But the minute I take time to feed myself spiritually, I start itching. The phone rings. My cat goes ballistic, throws up on the couch. Bizarre stuff happens. I promise you, you purpose in your heart to feed yourself spiritually, you will meet with resistance from your enemy, because he knows, even if we don't, what we need. So, you know, you go see your doctor and your doctor says, you know, you're stronger than this. Don't know why you're having so much trouble with this. And they'll start asking questions like, have you been sleeping? No. Well, what have you been eating? Well, you know, stuff. And after a while, he realizes your body can't fight this disease off because you haven't been feeding your body. It's really no different spiritually. We talked last week about Peter in his 2 epistles. I love those books. I love them because they were written by a guy who failed, who thought he was never going to fail. And so the stuff that he says is so valuable. He says stuff like, you're not strong. I know you think you are, but you're not. And he talks about trusting in God and being patient under pressure and all the things that he didn't realize at the time. Step 4 in Peter's downfall was he followed Jesus at a distance. Remember Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom? Remember Marlon Perkins? And, you know, I wish I could mimic his voice. He had a great voice. Kind of put you to sleep if you're a kid. But you know how the predators work on a herd? First of all, they scope it out and they look for the weak one, or they look for the one that's not paying attention. Satan's big deal as a predator that he is isolation. Get you away from the herd. And distraction. Watched this happen in my own life. I've watched it happen with people who were absolutely positive they were strong. Because it doesn't happen overnight. Like I said, it could be sort of natural thing. So, I got a job change. My hours have changed. I don't really have time to study. I really can't get up in the morning and read because, you know, I'm not a morning person. Can't really go to church. So they just changed my favorite program is now it's on Wednesday night. And I mean, pick a bunch of stuff. None of it looks evil at all. But the mind behind the distraction is predatory. Looking for an opportunity to weaken us spiritually, looking for an opportunity, pick us off from the herd. And then we're sitting ducks. Peter did follow, give him credit, but he got into his worst trouble And it's all a fruit of this whole sequence. Didn't think he was weak. Didn't think he really needed to pray. His adrenaline was flowing and his flesh was fine, thank you. His flesh was really strong and quick to react, but out of control. And he found himself just blending into the crowd and following farther and farther at a distance. And then step five was where he was at his worst vulnerability. He found himself warming himself at the enemy's fire. Hang on to this. I hope you don't need it. But you might. I have it. Yeah, but you need to know. We need to know that we're weak. It's just a beautifully laid out sequence. You could see it coming. Jesus certainly could see it coming. The only one that didn't see it coming was Peter. So I hope I didn't look at anybody, because I really don't have anybody specific in mind. If I knew you better, I would tell you the worst mistakes I've ever made and how every one of them fall into this same sequence, but it's embarrassing. So let's go over to verse 47 and we'll get as far as we're going to get today, and we'll look at some of these details. Don't you find it interesting? Last week we made this comment, and when we looked over at Luke 22, when Luke's account says that Jesus looked at Peter and said, you know, Satan has begged to sift through you guys. Peter, I know you think you're the strong one, but you're the one I'm praying for, because you're going to fail. And I'm praying that you won't stop trusting me after you fail. Because, and then he predicted that he would be restored. He would come back to the place he should have stayed. And he had something for him to do after he was restored. He said, strengthen your brothers. And of course, that is so liberating to me. Like I said, it is embarrassing that I didn't pay attention to this and made my worst mistakes in that frame of mind. But it's comforting that if, in order for me to know mercy and to be prepared to keep my guard at the place where I think I'm strong, and for me to be merciful to other people, if for all of that to happen in God's plan, I need to fail, he will allow that to happen. He warned Peter. He prayed for Peter. Peter still failed. So, forewarned is forearmed. Don't ever say, I would never do that. Been there, and like I said, lived to regret it. One other little addendum before we get into verse 47. I got plenty of time. So what's the big deal? If Peter was going to be forgiven and he was going to be restored and he was going to have a ministry, what's the big deal? So was Jesus telling Peter this to prevent this from happening? No, not really. He was just trying to spare him the attack on his conscience that was going to come later. That's the part of the enemy's tactic that we don't see coming down the pike. We don't see that when he stuck his foot out to trip us and we weren't paying attention and we fell, that he's going to use it against us now for the next 20 years. Oh, but I'm forgiven. Yeah. But do you have anything in your life that you'd give anything if you could make it so that it never happened? Boy, I do. And that's the problem. You can't. You can't take it back. You can't undo damage that you've done to people and to yourself. And Jesus wants to spare that. If Peter had been of a frame of mind, he wouldn't have maybe had, if Peter had just accepted, okay, Jesus, you say I'm weak. You say I need to pray. Yes, sir. Right away, sir. How long would you like me to pray, sir? He might have been protected, ever having to learn the hard way. And Jesus would love for us to learn the easiest way possible. Because that's a life without painful regrets that the enemy uses against you. So Jesus says, everybody, to Peter, James, and John that were praying with him, he said, you know, it's time to go, guys. This is all going down. The dominoes have started to fall. Here comes my betrayer, verse 46. And while he was still speaking, Judas arrived, and with him was a mob. 600 people. I did not write down which gospel recorded it, but this is the second time a group of ruffians, the goon squad, second time that they were sent to arrest Jesus by the same people. It was a fairly small group of guys. I think it was one squad, which I don't know how many that was, but it was less than a dozen people. And they sent them to arrest Jesus. And they came back. And their bosses, the religious leaders of Israel, said, hey, well, where's this carpenter we sent you to arrest? And you know, you can almost see him, you know, looking down at the ground and saying, well, nobody ever talked like him. They just went, they listened to Jesus, and they couldn't go through with it. Big, tough goon squad guys. They heard what Jesus said, and they just couldn't go through with it. So they sent more, a bigger goon squad. Sent 600 guys with clubs and swords. And Judas had made an arrangement. By the way, I think it's interesting, like in other radical religions, where people hire other people to do the dangerous stuff, and they sit carefully in their palaces and wait for the results. The leaders of Israel didn't go for this arrest in the middle of the night. They sent the goon squad. And most of these guys, most of them didn't know Jesus. Gail Irwin points out that, have you noticed in the Gospels how many times Jesus got lost in a crowd? He could slip right through a crowd. Isaiah, when he prophesied about Messiah, said he has no form or comeliness that would attract us to him. He wasn't like a comic book character where you want to find who the hero is. He's the guy with the biggest muscles. I had a friend who bought her 7-year-old son some Christian action figures, you know, David and Goliath, and he could not wrap his brain around the fact that Goliath was a bad guy, because Goliath was big and had muscles. David was a scrawny little red-haired runt. How could he be the good guy? Because, you know, in the world, the hero's the guy with the big muscles. Jesus didn't come that way. He didn't look like a hero. He looked like an ordinary person. I think that's one of the reasons why somebody who knew him had to actually go through the motions of pointing him out. Otherwise, they would have picked whichever of the disciples had the biggest muscles. Who had the most commanding presence? So Judas just did it in the rattiest way possible. That greeting that people in the Middle East still have, where they, you know, the the kissing you on the cheek thing. You go through the motions there. I'm sure it was an air kiss, being a guy. But I think this is an interesting interchange in verse 49 and 50, where Judas comes up and he gives the signal by kissing Jesus, and he says, "Teacher, Rabbi, okay, good to see you. Good to see you, Jesus. Sorry I wasn't here. I had stuff to do." And Jesus calls him friend, my friend. Second time in a few hours that Jesus has called Judas his friend. When was the last time? Anybody remember? He was at the Last Supper, yeah. Called Judas his friend. In fact, we looked last week the fact that Judas was in the seat of honor week before last. So why call him friend? That's the way he felt. I think he was giving him a chance to back out. That's so I think why he called him friend, the same reason why he called him friend at the Last Supper. He didn't publicly expose him. The only one that he really told that the one that's going to betray me is the one that's dipping in the dish with me right now. He just told that to John, who was sitting on his other side. But nobody knew it was Judas. Everybody thought that it could be them. All eyes didn't turn and look at Judas, which tells me that Jesus didn't really treat Judas any differently than the rest of them. Nobody expected him to be the one. Which is such a wonderful lesson in how we're not like him. Judas comes out to betray him, and he says, "Friend," if you have a translation that says, "What have you come here for?" To be fair, my NIV says, "Do what you've come for." There is no punctuation in the Greek, so the Greek is not clear. It could be a question. It could be a statement.